Welcome to the Atonicast. I'm Ed Niedermeyer, joined as always by Alex Roy and Kirsten Korosak. Earlier this year, we had the opportunity to record with a company called Intuition Robotics while we were in Tel Aviv, Israel. At the time, we weren't really sure how to make this episode work for the Atonicast because, well, Intuition doesn't really work in the mobility space at all. They are a home robotics company. But in the aftermath of our most recent episode with Jim Adler of Toyota AI Ventures, I feel like he was able to explain why a car company like Toyota should be looking at and potentially even getting into a company like Intuition Robotics, into robotics in general. And actually, Toyota AI Ventures is one of the investors in Intuition Robotics who we're about to hear from. So if you haven't listened to that episode with Jim Adler, I highly recommend it, if for no other reason than that it explains why a car company is investing in the company we're about to hear from. So with that, I'm pleased to have on the Atonicast, Dor Schuller, CEO and co-founder, of Intuition Robotics.
I have reached the age where if one tells me to wear socks, I don't have to, said Albert Einstein. Someone for Intuition Robotics
actually, you
explained
one
to
of
me
my favorite
why
quotes.
That's on the homepage of your website.
The whole point is that we seem to send our elders off to the farm, to old age homes, and in society we shun them out, as opposed to empower them, as we once did, and as opposed to give them tools to thrive in an age where technology matters. And we tend to do that. We want to do that in Intuition Robotics. We want to give the older adults the tools to master the technology they need to communicate with their families, to get around, to get the content and information that they want and need, but not try to be overbearing and tell them how to live their lives. And maybe, for example, they can master Snapchat, but they just don't wanna.
Well, I don't think I want them to either.
So what is the actual product?
Sure. So there are two parts that are important in Intuition Robotics. The first is the AI, and the second is the implementation of that AI into our first product, which is called LEQ. When you look at LEQ, it looks kind of like a lamp-shaped piece of art, I would hope, which wakes up and has a screen attached to it. And it is proactive as opposed to reactive, meaning thanks to our AI, it understands what happens in the home and initiates a lot of the conversations with the older adults and help them meet their own goals towards a healthy and proactive day and an active day. So, for example, it will suggest for them to go for a walk, to listen to some interesting music, to play some cognitive games. It will greet them and say good morning. It will do little micro gestures we call back channels of just noticing that they walk into a room and kind of pivot and look at them. It has multiple degrees of freedom. We use multimodality interactions where there's movement, there are lights, there are sound effects, there's voice and content on the screen, which is all coordinated and curated, if you will, to create an experience that we as humans unconsciously understand as very intuitive.
So it's curated. So how much learning is going on locally on the device in the AI specific to an individual user?
So it's a hybrid system. Some of the learning, there's a lot of adaptation and learning for that individual. Some of that learning we do on the device. Some of it we do in the cloud and then push a policy, if you will, that drives the behavior of that specific robot. So, for example, things that are time sensitive or real time, such as computer vision, we do locally on the device. However, understanding if this is a user that will react better to humor versus to a more endearing persona of the robot, we'll do in the cloud, looking at all of the data we collect, and then push a personality profile to that specific robot.
You'd have to do a lot of deep learning to understand the type of humor appropriate to say, one of my grandparents. This is in the Mel Brooks school. But I'm curious, though, so, you know, you can go out today and buy an Amazon device or a Google device with whom one can have a very limited relationship, shopping, weather data, and things like this. So what is the line between those types of devices, type of relationship? Because people have relationships with them, however limited and materialistic they are. But your device seems to be on the other side of the continuum. Where's the breakpoint? Can one shop using your unit? Does it integrate with Amazon, for example?
No, we
or
don't.
Is this just a personal relationship device?
It's a personal device, but think of it more as a sidekick that's loyal and helpful for the older adult rather than a point of sale. But it's also not a replacement for in-depth human relationships. So we see the primary goal on helping connect between family members and friends and the older adult using the technology that they feel comfortable using. So on one side, we help people come closer together by reducing friction on the family and loved ones, allowing them to communicate the way they want to, sending selfies or text messages or voice messages, and allowing the older adult to consume it in a way that's easy and intuitive for them. The other side, we are observing that there is somewhat of a relationship being built between LEQ and the older adult directly. And that's more about this sidekick that's there for them, whether it's greeting them and saying good morning. And we're talking about people that are feeling lonely often, whether it's suggesting to them activities that kind of spice up the day and help them try something new. And it is very different from the Amazons and the Google Homes of the world for a few basic reasons. The first is those experiences are very utilitarian in nature. You walk up to a voice assistant, you give it a command, you expect a result. There's no real relationship there, and the initiation party is always you. It's just like typing a command, except you give it in voice. Here, actually, the AI wakes up and says, "Hey, Alex, good morning. Hope you had a good night's sleep. By the way, the sun's shining. Maybe you should go for a walk." It's a very, very different interaction. And what we find is once you initiate the interaction, firstly, it's more effective with older adults, tend to stick to a repetitive routine, and it's hard to break through that without suggesting activities. But B, you start having multiple interactions per day. The reason we don't do shopping is we're trying to deliver real value through the product and not see it as a conduit towards their wallet.
So one of the biggest issues with folks once they go into sort of they're older or they lose some sort of mobility on their own is they become more isolated socially and also just the ability to get from point A to point B. Sure. So I'm wondering if you are going to be working in concert with, I don't know, other companies to like help them connect with transportation. One of the things I just totally off of the Autonicast and being a journalist, I also happen to be president of a nonprofit that helps elderly people within the neighborhood I live remain in their homes and independent. And the biggest service that we provide is free transportation. But sometimes understanding what their needs are is difficult. So are you going to have a component of that, of working with transit agencies or helping them connect to, I don't know, once they don't have a driver's license, let's say, get out and about in the world? Or is this really just a personal...
No, absolutely. I mean, if part of our goal is to bridge a digital divide, to be a functioning member of society today, you need to be able to use technology. Whether it's listening to music, you can't go to a CD store anymore and buy your favorite CD because they don't exist anymore. So you have to somehow enable people to consume digital media. At the same way, transportation is moving to all digital. So we already have a calendar that's shared with the family and allows the older adult to move from a physical kind of calendar to a digital one, allow the family to add activities and events to that calendar if the older adult allows them to. And we are working with the ride-sharing companies to offer a ride to that. So think of LEQ saying, hey, don't forget in an hour, you're going to the Philharmonic, you should maybe get ready. And then half an hour before that, you say, hey, do you want a ride for that? But I see a very big distinction between that and Alex's question on being a shop, right? If we can add value to the individual by helping them complete an action that they're having trouble with and they want to complete because it adds value to their lives, I see that very differently than pushing them to buy a DJI drone for $2,000 for their grandchild.
What about like medical services? Like you said, the check-in service obviously has a psychological component. It's really important. In fact, I could use a check-in service to remind me to call my own mother. So this is obviously there's a use case there that goes on the other side of the relationship. Absolutely. Equation. Are you going to integrate with doctors so people will be reminded to take their medications? And how would, I mean, if you don't interface with doctors, how would the device know?
Right. So first of all, we do two-way communications, and we're working on this feature we call GAS, guilt as a service, especially for you, Alex.
You're appealing to my better half.
So LEQ presumably can remind you to check in on mom. But in all seriousness, yeah, medication reminders are obviously important, as well as other things like which also help with wellness, such as hydration reminders. People forget to drink. Exercise, stretching, breathing, cognitive stimuli, all of those are important to remain active and engaged. So we do medication reminders. We currently don't do telehealth per se. That is a possible avenue for us in the future roadmap of the company. But right now we're trying to position LEQ as a tool that helps you thrive and celebrate aging and empower your loved one, and not I've fallen and I can't get up type of a tool for elders. So it's very much not in the safety and health category right now, but more on the thriving category.
What is the purpose of this lamp device section? I mean, I understand the screen section. The other part of it, which is cool looking, why does it move at all? And what is the purpose?
Yeah, so to us, it's a fascinating piece of academic research that really helped us start this company and decide to do this product. There's a field called human robotic interaction, or HRI, which is studying how humans interact with robots and how they feel towards robots. And it turns out, not surprisingly, by the way, that after millions of years of evolution, we respond to physical entities more than to just voices. And when you study how humans interact with each other, with all due respect to a podcast, voice is only about 10% of human interaction. The rest is body language, it's facial expressions. And intuitively, subconsciously, we understand these things. Now, especially when you try to communicate with people that haven't grown around technology and maybe even fear technology, the more you can get to an interaction which feels intuitive and they can subconsciously understand, the better you are. And we understand this not just between humans, we also understand a dog's body language, right? So when LEQ pivots and looks at you and lights up, people respond. When there's a message from your grandkids and she's jumpy and look, I'm like making you guys can't see over the podcast, but I'm like, my head's like bobbing, right? People understand that there's a positive message. When she doesn't understand you, to assume the blame on her and reduce anxiety from the other side, she'll bow down, her lights will be soft, and she'll apologize. And therefore it allows the users not to necessarily hear what she's saying, but perceive it in multiple ways to understand. And B, it allows for an interaction, which, dare we say it, is fun.
Yeah, I mean, having previously been a caregiver, actually, for nonverbal people with developmental disabilities, everything you're saying about that nonverbal aspect really resonates. And what's interesting about this is that it seems like you've tried to strike a balance of a certain amount of anthropomorphic form, but without getting into sort of the uncanny valley of something trying to look too human. Is that what you're going for?
Yeah, we have very strong opinions on this. Okay. And frankly, we think that the AI industry is moving to a very dangerous place of having robots try to mimic humans, which we think is a mistake. Everything about LEQ on one side is fun and endearing and so on, but on the other side is very clear. Everything about the interaction and the industrial design is very clear that this is a machine and it's not a human. She doesn't have eyes. She doesn't have a humanoid body. Actually, we call it an objectoid. Uh-huh. Her name is not a human name. It's LEQ. It's endearing and kind of familiar on one side, but the Q is very clearly an electronic device. Mm-hmm. In the interactions, she doesn't try to mimic a human as some tech companies are doing lately. Mm-hmm. But for example, if you ask her, what's your favorite food? She might say, oh, human food looks great, but I love delicious electrons, right? So it always grounds you with the fact that she's a device. And it's totally cool to have fun with her and to enjoy her, but she's not a human.
So the other half of the sort of
where I see the sort of human studies sort of foundation of what you're doing here is not just, right, so clearly, like, how do you create a device that you can interact with in a natural, intuitive way? But then also, how did that device interprets the, you know, the human aspect of it? So what kind of research or what kind of data or what are you using, you know, to allow this device to sort of understand, you know, the mood, the state, the needs of the customer or the partner or whoever
Describe that? So we were very fortunate when we started the company that perception, machine learning based perception, is becoming table stakes and, might we say, a commodity. And we're privileged that we can register to a lot of those things as services. Unfortunately, we had a lot more work to do than we thought in computer vision and some other areas. But by and large, it's going towards commoditization. And where we start is on the layers above. So the first thing we do is we fuse a lot of different perception inputs together and try to build a context awareness of what's happening at home.
So what kind of inputs are you talking about?
So whether it's face detection, whether it's face recognition, whether it's obviously understanding the voice of the individual, but also the location of the individual, whether it's other object in, identification, whether it's other sensory input from the outside, what's the weather, what day of the week is it, what time is it, whether it's all of the learning we've done until now about you to understand your likes and dislikes, their touch capacitors, their temperature sensors, all of these things go together. So if LEQ would be in this room right now, she'd recognize me, but she'd also recognize that there are five individuals she doesn't know, and that will drive her interaction, right, as kind of a state understanding. Then that feeds into something new that we did, which is a decision-making system, which is not an expert system. It's not a if this, then that, but it's a cognitive computing system that, based on understanding of context on one side and goals that she tries to achieve on the other side, makes dynamic decisions in real time. So she, for example, knows that it's important for you to, today, for example, to learn new things, to get out and about, to take your meds, to chat with your family, and to drink some water and to smile, to have some fun. But I don't know what the system is going to do at any given moment. In fact, even when she does nothing except show family pictures, which is kind of her idle state, it's a decision to do nothing because she has another goal, which has don't annoy the user too much or he'll disconnect you. So it's really a decision-making system. And once she decides what to do, then there is a reinforcement learning-based mechanism which adapts that chosen interaction to the individual in front of her. So once I decide to play music, how should I pitch it to you? Should I be funny? Should I be endearing? Should I offer classical? Should I offer jazz? Which of the different gestures and coordinated activities that were programmed should I choose to be most effective at this specific moment? And that allows to high level of adaptation and personalization. It also keeps the user surprised and helps create an engaging experience.
Yeah, I'm sorry, just one more. I was going to ask sort of about whether or not you know, the inputs from the user, the owner, and then also the responses, whether there's like cultural components, you know, whether this varies from place to place. Obviously, I think if it's adapting constantly, right, you're going to the system will probably figure out what those differences are, not just from culture to culture, but person to person. But I'm wondering, how much have you, do you have pilots with this? Are you studying it with real people? Is it just friends and family right now?
Yeah, so we have pilots in the Bay Area. We're now at around 10 homes for over 4 months, which have been very enlightening because it turns out it's relatively straightforward to create a great experience for a week. Mm-hmm. Doing that for months on end and having people use the system every single day and see it as what they refer to it, which I love, by the way, as clearly not a human and clearly not a device, but a new entity in their lives. That takes time, and that's why we're doing prolonged trials, and we're expanding the number of beta sites. We've been fortunate to have enough runway to do that properly. Your point on cultural adaptation is key. We've worked with over 150 older adults in the design of this product, and a lot of it went to the interaction and the persona design. And we think that we've done a reasonably good job for the North American market. Clearly, when we look at Asia, for example, you know, should she say, hey, you putz, you've been sitting all day, you should go for a walk? Or will that be grossly offensive? should she look more like Hello Kitty for the Japan market rather than kind of lamp shaped device? Maybe. So we don't know. And the way we are approaching it is deep fundamental cultural research per country and not just localization and translation.
How much is LEQ?
How much you got, Alex?
Well, to keep my mother placated, you cannot put a price.
Frankly, we're pretty big on research in this company because this is uncharted territory. So right now we're conducting price sensitivity analysis. There is going to be an upfront and a monthly component to it. We don't know exactly what the number is going to be, but it will be in the consumer electronics range, probably on the high end of that range.
You mentioned runway, that you have plenty of runway. And so it's worth mentioning that there is a connection between you as a guest and also our first guest on the Autonocast. One of your investors is Dr. Gil Pratt, correct?
Correct.
So who else is investing in the company and why is he investing in your company?
Sure. So we've been fortunate to have investors from all over the world. Yeah. As far as corporates, Toyota Gil Pratt, who mm-hmm. leads Toyota Research Institute, is our largest investor and a very big believer and a visionary, quite frankly. Other strategics include iRobot and Samsung. And then we have VCs from California, Japan, China, and Tel Aviv. So European investors, you're missing from our cap table. Please give us a call.
They don't care about their older people.
you said it, and you heard it here first, folks.
I'm surprised any Americans invested at all.
As far as their decision to invest, I think there is a growing understanding in anybody that's creating robots. And by the way, we see a self-driving car as a robot just as much as a robot that cares for an older adult, that human interaction is going to be key. And it's not enough just to create a device that doesn't bump into things, whether it's in the home or whether it's running over a child in the street. But the interaction between the human and the machine is paramount. And we'd like to believe that at least these strategic investors believe in our approach and the AI stack that we're doing and being relevant, of course, to the older adult ecosystem, which is very relevant to Toyota if you listen to where they're going and their vision of mobility outside of vehicles, but also for other use cases outside of aging.
That's interesting because, you know, when people talk about HMI, they talk about the average person in a car using infotainment. And then there's HMI research for self-driving, which I've not seen anything good. And all concepts are just voice control. And then you've got, you know, the Drive AI has these screens in the exterior of the vehicles, which are meant to interact with pedestrians in a lowest minimum viable communication level. And so do you anticipate LEQ or a variant of it going into, say, a self-driving vehicle? Because my mother, for the life, you could not put her in almost any modern car. She hates them. She likes dials. She likes a two buttons and a knob.
Yes. So if, you know, this is early days. If I was kind of put on the spot to imagine that experience, I wouldn't imagine an LEQ inside of the car, like a bobbing head doll.
You see
talking.
What I mean? There is one. I would imagine interface that's optimal.
Yeah. I would imagine the car itself adapting to the individual, because the car itself is the entity. The car itself would greet you. The car itself would move around, light up, move its seats, change the temperature. You don't need an actuation device. I mean, maybe, well, you know, we need to research that if we would do something like that. But I think the car itself has so much sensory input on one side and so many actuation opportunities, whether it's lights, screens, adjustments of seats, et cetera, that it itself can adapt to the individual and maybe do so differently depending on who's in the car. Is it just me driving to work, or is it me taking my kids to the beach? Or is it my wife and I finally getting a sitter and going out? If I'm in a ride-sharing experience, is it consistent? If there is a ride-share passenger, like a pool passenger joining, does that experience change?
Yeah, we don't trust them.
Right? So those are the things. Like, if the way I would think about that is more about not just creating a little mini LEQ in between the seats.
I like that. It's like a modern bobblehead with AI. It's cool.
Cool is good, yeah. And I'm not saying no. And again, we're building things for older adults right now. But in general, if you think about these devices, I think using the parts of the device that make it unique and you make it who it is actually is part of the interaction is really interesting, and not just putting a 2D screen on there.
We like to ask everyone who their competitors are. In your case, is it the people who are trying to make things that cross that uncanny valley? Is that the alternate approach?
No, to be quite candid, I think our competitors, but also our partners. And when I say partners, is we are a very small partner to them, but they're very important to us, are people like Amazon and Google. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they'll go in directly into this area. I think the aging industry, even though it's going to be 30% of the population in very shortly. In Japan, it's above 25%. But we don't see them creating dedicated efforts in this area. But if you look at the speed and the type of talent they're hiring, whether it's in AI, whether it's in robotics, I'm a lot more worried about people like Google and Amazon. Again, even though they're our friends and they help us, it's strange the way these things work, rather than people working on infotainment in cars. Mm-hmm.
We need to probably wrap this up soon, but I have one last question that I think. Will LEQ collect data, possibly anonymized? Because it seems like it could be actually a really good research tool as sort of the leading edge of a whole field of understanding the needs and helping sort of the needs of aging people. But then, of course, with that opportunity comes, challenges and potentially risks. So what is your perspective on that whole issue?
Sure. So firstly, there are two principles which we operate in. The first is full transparency. We don't hide the fact that there are sensors and cameras and so on. And second is zero trust environment. So we are assuming that somebody hacks into the products, and then what? So everything is encrypted, uses certificates, and we try to operate as, you can never say you're 100% secure, but we're taking great extremes and great steps, which I haven't seen other people do. In the security aspects of it. As far as collecting data, we absolutely collect data. We promise not to monetize that data in any way. We definitely, as I mentioned, take great steps to secure that data. Now, if the individual wants to use that data to increase their health and well-being, I think that's great. If they'll decide that they want to release anonymized data for the benefit of humanity and research, because nobody really has consistent tracking of older adults day in, day out, then that will be up to them. Right now, what we're seeing is older adults are willing, and again, it's on an opt-in basis, to share some of the data we collect with their loved ones. So for example, you can, if you're the primary caregiver of your mom, you can, and she gave permission, you can go on our app and see that we saw her today. Or when's the first time we saw her? When's the last time we saw her? Not extreme privacy invasion, but at least you know everything's okay. So, but that's all in the direct control of the older adult, and we're not trying to monetize that data for commercial benefit.
All right. Well, this is fascinating stuff. Really Thank look you. Forward to hearing more about this. So, folks, I guess can go to intuitionrobotics.com if they want to learn more. Are you on social media as well?
We're in social media, and we have a waitlist open at www.leq.com for the product.
Okay, and that's phonetically like
ELLIQ.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.